Welcome to a burning fire. Jeremiah 20 and verse 9. Your speaker is Jim Boyd. This is our third and final presentation on the theme, His Judgment Taken Away. Previously, we have investigated how justice was deprived Christ when he was arrested in the Garden of Gethsemane, and we have seen the mockery of justice as he stood before the Jewish tribunals, and we now turn our attention to the trials of Jesus before Roman authorities. In John chapter 18, beginning with verse 28, Then led they Jesus from Caiaphas unto the hall of judgment, and it was early. And they themselves went not into the judgment hall, lest they should be defiled, but that they might eat the Passover. I want us to first note, does it not strike you as odd how the enemies of Christ were meticulous in not defiling themselves by entering the Gentile courtroom, but it did not seem to have much concern over hiring false witnesses, making an illegal arrest, inventing accusations, and sending an innocent man to death? But the passage continues. Pilate then went out unto them and said, What accusation bring ye against this man? And they answered and said unto him, If he were not a malefactor, we would not have delivered him up to thee. Now Pilate was no friend of the Jews, and he seemed to resent the impudence, as if they had come to tell him what he had to do. For they told Pilate that Jesus was guilty, or they never would have even brought him to Pilate. And all they wanted was Pilate to agree with their decision without any investigation on his part. They said, in essence, We know he is guilty. The fact that we brought him here is all the proof you need. Condemn him and be done with it. But Pilate did not respond the way they wanted. He said, Take ye him and judge him according to your law. Now Pilate was telling them, if they were so certain about Jesus deserving death, then they should take care of the matter. But he knew, and they knew, that they could not execute Jesus because putting a person to death for crimes, real or imagined, was not their right under the Roman authority. Pilate was really humbling them into recognizing how he was the one that had authority. And Pilate asked, What evil hath he done? Now their first reaction was nothing that needed to be said. Their second reaction was, they had already decided. He was worthy of death. But this was not testimony. This was not proof. Just because they had brought him there was not proof that he was guilty. This was not even an accusation. This was merely an inflated assertion. And Pilate was not moved by it. And he took Jesus privately inside the palace to question him. When the Jews saw that their assertions would not suffice, then they began to make accusations. But notice, it was not the same ones they had made in their own courts. They invented accusations to fit the circumstances. Now they accused Jesus of things that were designed to prejudice the mind of Pilate. They said, He refuses to pay taxes, he claims to be a king, he's not loyal to Caesar. And that was the tone of their charges. Well, now Jesus did teach people to pay their taxes. And he told them to render unto Caesar the things that were Caesar's. And Jesus even paid the temple tax the Jews were required to pay. And while he claimed to be king, the nature of his kingdom would not rival the civil power. His was a spiritual kingdom. He had violated no law of the Romans. And in private, Pilate asked Jesus, Art thou a king? And Jesus explained to Pilate the nature of his kingdom. John 18:36, My kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, then would my servants fight, that I should not be delivered to the Jews. But now is my kingdom not from hence. In this conversation with Jesus, Pilate was convinced that Jesus was no evil man, and the charges against him were false, in fact, motivated by hatred and prejudice rather than by their loyalty to Rome. Accordingly, he went before the Jews and said, I find no fault in him. Now this stirred consternation and frustration within the Jews, and their dissatisfaction was quite evident. And they began bringing additional charges, trumped-up charges, distorted half-truths. They said, "He stirs up the people all the way from Galilee, where he began, all the way down to Judea." And then upon hearing that Jesus was from Galilee, Pilate thought he saw a way out of this problem, at least for himself. Learning Jesus was a Galilean and Pilate's jurisdiction did not extend into Galilee, and that Herod Antipas, fortunately for him, who did rule Galilee, just happened to be in Jerusalem at that time. And so he decided to send Jesus to Herod. After all, Herod had the rule over this man, and he knew the Jewish laws better than Pilate. So the first of three sessions before the Romans ended with Pilate trying to shift the responsibility of making a decision regarding Jesus from himself to Herod. He was satisfied that he was forever rid of the matter. Certainly Jesus was denied justice. He should have been set free. He was judged by Pilate to be guiltless, but was denied his freedom nonetheless. Is that justice? But if justice was perverted before Pilate, it was more perverted before Herod. The second trial was shorter than the first, but was more physically brutal. For Jesus, it was one of the most humiliating experiences during his entire suffering. Herod began by asking irrelevant questions, seeking to soothe his personal curiosities. But to such questions, Jesus gave no answer. Herod demanded he perform some miracle for his entertainment. But again, Jesus maintained his strict silence. Herod then began making sport of him. A king needed a robe, so he had a robe put on him. The court laughed. And Herod, in his arrogant manner and egotistical way, dismissed Jesus from his court with mockery and derision, sending him back to Pilate. He acted as if he really had no time for such a one as Jesus. Just men cringe at the thought of a presiding officer making abuse of the accused and allowing such maltreatment. But in all of this, his judgment was taken away. And the third of the three trials before the Romans was again before Pilate. It seems that Jesus was with Herod, and while he was there, Pilate's wife sent a message to Pilate, advising him to have nothing to do with what she described as this just man. And with this warning ringing in his ears, Pilate subjected Jesus to another private examination. It appears, at least on the surface, that Pilate was seeking some way to save Jesus, but at the same time not offend the Jews that he ruled. And after the questioning of him again, he announced that he found no fault in Jesus. Now this is the second time. This surely should have ended the matter. Jesus should have been set free if justice had prevailed. But then we see Pilate as he made a fatal mistake. He suggested, "I will chastise him and release him." This he offered as a compromise, hoping this might satisfy the Jewish wrath, but he did not realize that one cannot meet evil halfway. He should have stood for the right. He had no reason even to chastise Jesus. Pilate committed the sin of compromise, and in this way he allowed the wedge to enter that led eventually to allowing the death sentence to be completed. If Jesus was guilty, then crucify him. If innocent, then let him go. But why this chastisement, except to look for the impossible position of halfway between right and wrong? And Pilate sought another way to release him. It was the custom to release one prisoner at the time of the Jewish Passover. Who should be released? There was another man in bonds named Barabbas, one convicted of insurrection and of robbery and of murder, condemned by both Jews and Romans. "Whom shall I release?" asked Pilate, expecting the Jews to release Jesus before they would release such a one as Barabbas. The answer he's got was not what he expected. They wanted Barabbas released and Jesus killed. And this they cried at the insistence of their leaders. And Pilate said, "Why, what evil hath he done?" But the mob, led by the priest and the other Jewish leaders, urged Pilate to condemn Jesus. Pilate still held to the hope of saving Jesus, even after the Jews rejected the compromise of chastisement. He decided to scourge him anyway. And in scourging the victim is stripped, stretched against a post, unmercifully whipped by ropes, often containing bits of stone and bone so that the blows would literally rip into the flesh, tearing it until the victim bled. Not infrequently, the victim died under the pounding that he would receive. But Jesus did not die. But you can imagine the pain as a result of this brutality. And before dressing Jesus again in his own seamless garment, the soldiers of Rome made sport of him again, similar to what had happened before Herod. They cast a purple robe about him as Herod had done. A king needed a crown, so they made him one from a thorn tree and pressed it upon his brow. The king needed a scepter, so they thrust a reed into his hands. Then mockingly they marched around him, they bowed before him, they slapped him, they covered his bleeding body with their spittle. And when they struck him, they would cry, "Tell us who hit you." Can any fair-minded person not be repulsed at such injustice? In his humiliated condition, Pilate brought Jesus before the mob. Possibly this scene would quench their thirst for vengeance against him, but it did not. It only whetted their wicked appetite for his death all the more. "Crucify him," was the shout that grew louder and louder. And Pilate announced, "Behold your king." And the Jews answered, "We have no king but Caesar." God was to have been their king and to be their king forever. But by these words we see the degraded level to which the Jewish nation under their leaders had sunk. They said, "Let his blood be on us and on our children." That was their defiant reply. And then Pilate withered and bowed before their pressure. In Matthew 27, verse 24, when Pilate saw that he could prevail nothing, but that rather a tumult was made, he took water and washed his hands before the multitude, saying, "I am innocent of this just person. See ye to it." Pilate allowed himself to sentence an innocent man to die. Luke 23, verse 24, and Pilate gave sentence that it should be as they required. And he released Barabbas. He delivered Jesus to be crucified. And so the final chapter of his trials came to an end. Yes, justice was taken away from Jesus from beginning to end. Without indictment, he was arrested. Without verdict, he was condemned to die on the basis of false testimony. He was judged and found innocent, but condemned nonetheless. Even his accusers could not say what evil he had done. And after the trials, as he went along the way toward Golgotha, the injustices followed him. The railing and mockeries continued. One thief, who was to be crucified that day, said, "One of the malefactors which were hanged railed on him, saying, 'If thou be Christ, save thyself and us.' But another answered, rebuked him, saying, 'Dost thou not fear God, seeing thou art in the same condemnation, and we indeed justly? For we receive due reward of our deeds, but this man hath done nothing amiss.'" My dear friend, well did Isaiah prophesy, "In his humiliation, his judgment was taken away." There is no better way to conclude these three lessons than to again ask the question, as we have asked before, why? Why did he do this? Why did he suffer all of this? My dear listener, it was a manifestation of God's love for me and for you. It was the willingness of Christ to die that we might be saved from our condemnation of hell because of our sins. He did it not only for our temporal, but also for our eternal benefit, even eternal life in heaven. And what do you say to the one who has done all of this as he did? Can we turn away from him as if it were nothing? Or shall we come to him and receive the blessings that he has provided? This has been A Burning Fire, and your speaker is Jim Boyd. Until next time.